This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello, I'm Chris Stafford, and this is episode 228. On this week's show, we're going to be covering the Future Event Horse Symposium, which took place in Florida recently. We'll be hearing from some of the judges, Peter Gray and Robin Walker, as well as Christian Schacht, who specialized in conformation. We'll hear from Peter Gray about what he looks for as a judge for the in-hand classes as well as for the jumping. But before we hear from Peter, Robin Walker will explain his views on the judging for the Future Event Horse as well as the way forward for the program. Hi, Robin. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And of course, we are here to talk about the Future Event Horse, the recent symposium, and we're going to be covering several aspects of this, of course, on this week's episode. But let's start with the bigger picture, Robin, of where you see the development of the program at this point and what you feel is necessary to move it forward.
For a couple of years now, I've been concerned that our infrastructure is not keeping up with, or isn't going to be keeping up with, the number of people who want to be involved. So when I got to the symposium on that Thursday morning, the first thing I saw when I opened my packet was the calendar for 2019, which, when you look at the number of qualifiers, on one hand, that's exciting, the amount of support that the program's getting. On the other hand, that was a bit of a shock to me, because I've been worried about the number of judges, the amount of experience that those judges have or don't have, and the quality of the judging, which has been something that we've been dealing with across when that spreads into the YEH program too. So that's been my big concern over the last couple of years, that we need to get a handle on that. And when you look at, as I say, when you look at 2019, we have a program now that has roots that go deep in the ground with people that want to support it, which is great. So that was our thrust in the seminar this winter, and it was a good day. I enjoyed it. We had plenty of judges there, and that's going to be the way forward, getting that more solid.
And how do we do that, then, Robin? What's your thoughts on how to do that?
We've got people who are experienced in the eventing side of things. When we started, we wanted the small R rated judge, because they understand the structure of everything. We've now got to the point where we've got some judges who have not been around in that, meaning they've not attended stuff on a regular enough basis. And I've had a couple of people who said to me that over the years that they're concerned about doing yearlings and all that type of thing. So we focused on that seminar day, we focused on what you need to be good at and how you need to, the nuts and bolts of how you look at a young horse and know whether it's correct, know whether it's where it is in its developmental stage. And I think we have to have that frank conversation, which we did, which I enjoyed very much. And we have to get our judges confident with what they're looking at. And that was the part of the day that I enjoyed the most, where we could have a frank conversation about what is right, what is not right, and how you deal with that when you actually have to start to write things down on a piece of paper instead of, a number of people have said to me privately, I'm not sure what to write down over the years, and also I need to be better at looking at it. Well, there's only one way you get better at doing it, and that's by doing it and exposing yourself to it. So that's where it starts. I wanted a test at some stage, which we will get to that point, but I think we're away from that at the moment. To accomplish that, we'll need video in at championships, and then we'll need some kind of, the most practical way to do it is an internet-based test where you view videos. What will happen at the East Coast Championships this year is judges will be contacted and they will be able to come and intern behind the championship judges. So they will see the speed at which things have to happen. I'm going to try and attend the East Coast because it'll be in between Malvern Park and Plantation Field. And I'm going to sit with the judges and we're going to discuss the whole thing and they'll get that mileage, which I think is very important. So, you know, in the future, if somebody steps up to that level, they're not standing there looking at 50 horses to do, going, how the hell did I get involved in this? So that's what we're going to try and do this year. And I think that needs to be covered multiple times. So the thrust of the seminars are going to be, and the education days are going to be all about getting judges comfortable, more experienced, and giving them the mileage so that can support the breeders and the organisers.
Geographically, Robin, is it a challenge to get a good disbursement of judges across the country, given the growth of the programme?
Well, we've got the Central now in Texas, and that's going to give people a whole option down there. But because if I lived down there, I wouldn't want to travel to California or the East Coast with a young one, and I think that's obvious and that's healthy. The more we can get this going and spread out, we do need to go and do something on the West Coast at some stage. Because everybody knows the cost of travel and time away. So I think we do not just need to stay on the East Coast. We need to get out there and get that base established across the middle of the country and to the west. The most convenient place to do it, however, where the largest number of judges can get, is the East Coast. The West Coast is steady, but it doesn't have the numbers of the East Coast. But I hear what you're saying, because other people have said that too. We do need to be able to get down to each area and make sure that we are delivering the same thing, so that the people who are judging there are going to be able to feel as confident as those who are judging elsewhere.
Is it almost a victim of its own success then, Robin, that you've got such demand for it now and yet not all the pieces are in place?
Yeah, I've been worried about this, and if we don't catch up, I'm just being honest here. We've got a lot of support. We've got people who are confident that we're making an effort to do it. We need to deliver on that now in this next year and the year after. We need to create that platform. This year we've got Peter Gray and Chris Ryan judging the championships. We need to make sure that next year, which is where I'm already looking, we need to make sure that next year we have stable judges with mileage. And that's going to be my big focus behind the scenes, making sure that we put that time in so that whoever does want to step up to do it has had the kind of experience and they feel comfortable. And I think probably the way we'll do it, there'll be a very experienced judge and somebody else stepping in with them. But that isn't decided yet. Committee hasn't decided that yet. But that's the truth about where we are. We need to stay on top of that.
How many judges do we have right now then, Robin? Do you know? And how many more we would actually need to fulfill the program at the rate of growth that we're witnessing right now?
Susan's got that list. I've been too busy competing, so I don't keep that in my head. But what I will say is we had a good number of YEH judges at the seminar, and I would like to see that spread across the board. I will say this about Peter. I've judged with him twice. He judged the test class with me when we originally did it years ago. And he's now become very valuable in terms of his use to an organizer, because he's a national dressage judge, he's an FEI judge, and he can judge the YEH, and he can judge the FEH. So I would like to see that develop, that template develop with other judges across the spectrum, so they can do multiple things, which makes it more viable for everybody concerned. But I don't keep that list in my head, I'm afraid. But I do know that we're going to need to consolidate eventually and expand. So what will be happening is by the time we get to the end of the championships this year, Susan and I, as co-chairs, will have contacted every judge on our list, and we'll know who's going to be able to attend things and who wants to continue and who maybe wants to step aside, or we'll know where we stand by the end of this year, and then we'll be able to start developing a bigger list or a more concise list. But I don't have the actual numbers in my head, I'm afraid.
Given the important role of this program in the development overall of the event horse in this country, Robin, what would you say to breeders and owners, before they actually start taking part in this program? What would be your message to them to prepare now?
Well, they have to make a decision on what they're trying to do. I mean, if you're going to breed a... When we go looking for amateur horses, for instance, in Ireland, we're looking for your half-bred, or maybe less, that's hunted. And if you can find a pony club family horse, it's exactly what you're looking at. Now, there are some breeders in America that have taken and done that. If you're trying to breed a top horse, then you're looking at the influence of your thoroughbred blood in your breeding program. When you look at some of the horses now, the first two generations of the pedigree, you won't see a whole pile of thoroughbred, but you go back three or four crosses, then you'll see that there's plenty back there which is producing the more sporty quality types that you see now. So it just depends what you're trying to do. The next thing would be, once that decision's made, if you can find a performance mare, we are desperately short in America of performance mares. The other countries are not. And the only reason we are short, is because we're too young in the breeding program. But performance on the mare side, especially, is high on the list in every other country. Then, in terms of getting ready to go to a competition, get them handled. You've got to be able to produce a horse on the day that's comfortable with being handled. We've had, over the years now, we've had a number of horses that, whilst they look great, they don't show themselves well. And that puts us as judges in a tricky position, because that's going down to the general impression marks, and that's going down to the overall. And that leads to disappointment if you don't get to see it. I'll tell you one story from last year or the year before at Lochmoy. Lovely big chestnut horse comes into the jump chute in the four-year-old class, and he's herd bound, and they bring the other horse to the top of the hill, and we couldn't do a thing. He was a lovely big moving type, but he had to be excused. The only thing he did do was jump from almost a standstill the inside rail on the jump chute, which was about 1.50 meters, and he jumped it easily. But that was all he showed. He just couldn't cope. So we've seen a number of those things. The people who are now preparing the horses are doing a much better job, and the horses that turn up at championships increasingly know what they're doing. So there needs to be a system if you're going to get involved, so that you can turn up with a horse that's confident, knows what it's doing, and it can handle itself and show itself. And that would be my message. Plus, decide what horse you're breeding. The quality is getting better and better all the time. And we should be in a position shortly, if it's not already happening, where riders and breeders are starting to make relationships, because there's some nice horses, and I don't know, obviously, where they're all going to end up. But there's some nice ones coming through now, and the quality is improving every year. So,
So back to basics, then make sure that horse is presentable, is manageable in hand, knows how to show itself before you get to the competition, get to the symposiums, these young event horse and future event horse classes. All important groundwork there, but a very, very bright future, Robin, for this program then as it builds. It's just a matter of keeping up with it.
Yes. Yep, that's what we have to do. Every year it's getting stronger. We've worked out an awful lot of the kinks over the years. The professional jump crew on the day, for instance, at the championships is an absolute must. That keeps everything steady and organised. Handlers, if you're a breeder and you're not sure you can get it done, you've now got people you can contact who can handle your horse. Make sure they get to know it, not just the day before or 2 days before. And that's the way we were hoping it would go. And definitely last year, Martin Duzon did a great job on the East Coast, and he was hired to go to Texas to help there. And that's exactly the kind of infrastructure that we were hoping we'd see develop, and it's developing. So I want to see that continue.
Fantastic. And of course, find those performance mares too.
Well, correct. I mean, yeah, we have a couple in the yard here that we're going to keep and see, because that's what we're missing. I had manners put on me properly in Ireland a few years ago when I went over to see a stallion and visit some friends, and I got taken to lunch, and these two old guys were sat in the coffee shop and they bought me lunch, and all they talked about was their brood mares, and I was sitting there quietly eating my lunch, and I didn't open my mouth at all, because I'm thinking, okay, well done for getting it completely wrong. But I got more education in that half an hour or hour conversation, and that if we can start to harness our brood mares, harness our performance mares and do something with them, then we're going to be in a better place.
Wonderful. Great message there to take away, Robin. As always, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to come on the program and for all the work you do with this program too.
Thank you very much for having me, and we'll catch up. Thank you.
Peter Gray was also one of the judges at the Future Event Horse Symposium, and he explains what he looks for as a judge for a future event horse, both on the flat and over fences. Hello, Peter. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Judging is something you're doing on a regular basis now, all kinds of classes. But we want to focus on the future event horse, of course, in the recent symposium. And I think because we're speaking to Robin as well, we're going to split this up as to what you guys have been looking for in the program and how the program is developing. So why don't we focus on what you're looking for, Peter, as a judge, both in hand and in jumping, and what you saw at this year's symposium?
Well, Chris, first of all, let's begin by saying this country really needs to look at the horsepower of our international teams as we go forward, because eventing has become a very sophisticated sport, and the horses are of very, very high caliber and quality. So we've got to, I think, really look at our breeding and start to produce our own horses and help the breeders with how to produce the best horses for this sport, because they've just been so hard to find and so expensive if you go to purchase them in Europe. So the program, I think, is a very, very important one, a very valuable one. And I must say, with our travel to the East and West Coast Championships and at the symposium, the quality has really been impressive. So I think there has been some rethinking of our breeding program. I think the breeders are really looking at what it takes to produce a top horse, and I think we're starting to get on the right track.
Well, that's very encouraging, of course, and there are many components to this, but with the horses that have been brought forward to you, what have you been looking at? Let's take the in-hand first of all, Peter, and the kind of things you're looking for.
Well, I mean, we'll get to the type in a minute, but obviously what has been exciting to us as championship judges is the bloodlines. People are really looking at the top horses in Europe and what how they're bred and what thoroughbred lines are matching well with which warm bloodlines. And so it's not just willy-nilly that there's a formula in place. In fact, Robin may have mentioned, but we have judged two heraldic Contendro crosses, and of course that's the breeding of Chipmunk, one of the world's best horses in the sport. So we were flabbergasted to think that we've already got some yearlings and two-year-olds on the ground with that identical breeding. So that that's one of the exciting things. Not only the Contendro Heraldic, but there's other top lines in Europe that people are breeding, and we're seeing them in the championship. So the type is important. The bloodlines are, of course, very relevant to the sport. The stallion lines that are doing well in eventing, for the jumping ability, the temperament for the dressage, the gallop. So we're looking for the type, but as a trainer myself, I see people spending so many years producing horses, and in the end, the conformation lets them down, and they don't hold up to the work at the top level. So we've really got to look at the conformation, and it's been very interesting judging the in-hand and seeing some quite nice specimens, but also I think enough feedback from the breeders to know if they're on track or not with their broodmares as far as the conformation goes, because that's such an important part of it.
Absolutely critical, of course, developing the performance mares. Now, in terms of the new format then with in the sport, is this informing the breeding lines? Because we hear constantly about how it demands two different animals. What are you seeing that this is influencing the breeding and influencing young and future event horses in the program that you're seeing, the horses that you're being presented with? And indeed, the thoroughbred influence, Peter.
Yes. Certainly, there have been conversations that horses need to be 70%+ thoroughbred. But, I mean, we have seen some top horses in the world that have very little thoroughbred in them. But if they are Arab and Tricaner and Hofstadters are very sort of ambitious horses that want a job and very competitive. So it's amazing. There are horses out there that are doing well in our sort of shorter format sport now that don't have huge amounts of thoroughbred. But as a guideline, we're looking, I think, for 50% at least. So we do have good thoroughbred lines in North America. I mean, we've got some of the top flat horses in the world. It's whether they cross with certain mares and produce jumpers. I think one thing Robin was very keen on, and I think this is something we really need to look at, is producing some sort of registry now for the breeders so we can keep track of which horses are doing well, which crosses are doing well, and it's accessible to the public. Let's look up the pedigree of this young horse in the young event horse program. Let's start competing. Let's have a look and see how it's bred and where do these stallions stand and how much is it going to cost the stud fee. So I think we need to up our game now and start looking at a registry.
Need the signposts really for the breeders, don't you?
Absolutely, because they're trying. It's a very expensive proposition breeding horses, and they need some help. They're keen. We need to give them some help.
Let's go back to what you're looking for then. I want to come back to the symposium because that was recent and people were following that, of course, and using that as the signpost too. So give us a sense as a judge what you were seeing, not just in hand, but also in jumping, and what you were looking for and how those two were meeting.
Okay, so both components, of course, are very important. But, with the in-hand, let's start at the bottom. They have to have good feet. I mean, they have to have a good, solid structure. a good solid bone formation, strong legs with a good amount of bone. But if there's not a good set of feet to carry that lovely body, then we're really it's going to be an uphill battle for the whole competition career of that horse. So feet, the conformation of the limbs, the structure of the limbs, the bone. And I mean, it sounds very obvious, but to get a horse with a really good balanced set of four legs is the most important thing, I think. And it's actually a fairly weak area in a lot of the young horses that we see. And then you get a good specimen come out and get presented in front of you, and you think, wow, this is what we want. Something that is balanced on all four legs with a solid bone structure. The athletic ability of these horses is normally, I think, in my opinion, reflected in the activity of the movements of the walk and the animation of the walk and the action of the hind leg in the trot and the freedom of the forearm. So that's going to be relevant whether you're jumping or doing dressage or galloping. I think that that athletic ability, the looseness of the movement, and the balance of the way they move. And the free jumping, I'm so happy that they've introduced this now into the program, because this is really another huge component of producing that top event horse is their ability to jump in good technique. And certainly we can teach horses to improve the technique that they are born with, but they have to have a certain level of competency jumping fences and athletic ability. We judge the gallop or the canter as well in the free jumping phase. And you really can have a sense, Chris, watching the horses canter around, whether they are balanced, whether they can get to the base of the fence and push with some sort of scope and not jump the fence with momentum. So those are the sorts of things we're analyzing as we judge the free jump. Their ability to get up and over a spread fence from a deep distance, and you can get an idea of their technique and the power or the scope behind that jump.
Of course, it's very easy when you breed a horse, Peter. I'm just talking about coming back to the real basics now. And you have a horse and you first see him jumping, and you think, wow, he's got an amazing jump. You get in front of a group of judges and you realize that you were looking at all the shiny parts, so to speak, that you really are missing some of the basics. That balance that you spoke about, balance on all four legs. And, you know, the old adage of no foot, no horse. And it can be discouraging when you that's a reality check for owners and breeders, isn't it? And so I'm just wondering, Peter, how as a judge, you know, where you have to push back and when you're looking at these horses and it is a reality check for the handlers, for the owners, for the breeders. So it's the message has to be in the breeding, doesn't it? And the homework before, you know, handling the horse before you ever put them in front of a judge.
Yeah, we did have, it's a good point, Chris. We did have a couple of horses that were very poorly presented at the championships. And the handling was very difficult because the behavior wasn't good. So, of course, it makes it near impossible for us to give a fair evaluation of that horse if they're not presented correctly. So that's one part of the component. The other thing is, I think we really have to be fair with the breeders. When we are at a symposium, that is a chance to offer constructive criticism about the future of this particular horse that's come in front of us. When we're judging, our job is to judge what's in front of me and not give them an opinion about how far the horse is going to go or whether it's a quality horse or a reject and they should give up. I think that's not our job. But in a symposium type situation, this is where we need to have free conversation and open conversation with the breeders to say, this horse that you have bred, it would be unfair on this animal to try to take him up the levels in eventing because of, for example, as you pointed out, very poor foot quality or shape. The amount of bone, perhaps we've got a fantastically conformed and beautiful horse, but it just doesn't have the limbs to carry the upper body. So it would be unfair to put that horse through the sport of eventing, but maybe it could find another career as a low-level dressage horse or a show hunter or something. I mean, I think there's a place for every horse, and we have to help the breeders if they are going to go forward in the eventing industry, that they have to be starting out with a prospect with good conformation, the blood type, and a well-balanced and athletic canter and jump.
As you say, what you do in the arena and the feedback they may get from this will help them to guide that horse in its optimum career. This seems to be a very important gateway for the young event horse, the future event horse.
Yes, the gateway is important, but the breeders, most of the breeders in this country are small breeders, and meaning that they only have between one and three broodmares. And to most of them, these are members of the family. So the criticism has to be fairly carefully administered when talking to them. As much as they want to be accepting of constructive criticism and advice where they should go, we have to remember that these very often are members of the family for these people, and they're very emotionally attached, and perhaps they have to be a little bit of politically correct when you're with the choice of words when you're describing what you think about these prospects.
Yeah, a very good point, as you are. There is that emotional attachment. But I think the program itself certainly is a way forward for the future event horses. And I'm wondering if there's any other takeaways that you would like our listeners to have from this, Peter, you know, because you've given good advice on what you were looking for there as a judge, both in hand and jumping. What would be your biggest takeaways from this year's symposium and that you would like our listeners to take away?
I think the concept of the registry, and until we have a registry to really be studying the bloodlines of which sows match well with which mares, which thoroughbred lions go well with which warm blood breeds. And for that, one has to, you know, seek professional advice. Chris Ryan, who's been involved with the FEH and YEH, is an absolute encyclopedia of bloodlines, and he's so knowledgeable. And he's always willing to share his experiences and his knowledge. So to chat to someone like him, and maybe somehow through the USEA, FEH, and YEH programs, we should make someone like this available to the breeders for maybe online chat or some sort of Q&A. I think maybe that would be really useful. But my takeaway is breeders are wanting to do the right thing. They just need to be advised on what bloodlines are available to us and which ones are going to be working well for their broodmares.
Terrific. Well, Peter, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program today, and of course the work that you put into the Future Event Horse program on behalf of the USEA. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Chris. It was my pleasure.
And finally, joining me now is Christian Schacht, who will explain what he's looking for in conformation in the Future Event Horse. Hello, Christian. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm more than happy to be a part of it.
Well, we do appreciate you taking the time to do this and the time you spent, of course, on Future Event Horse program itself. And we want to talk about conformation. And obviously, this is something that you specialize in as a veterinarian. And you probably could talk us through what you saw and what you were looking for. So where would you like to start?
That's pretty easy. It's, you know, the problem with the conformation is if we can look at a horse at the age of 16 with a successful career, and at the end of the career we can say, due to the confirmation, this horse was so successful. But it's real hard to have our crystal ball and see in a five-year-old horse, this horse will make it up to the levels, especially we cannot see the confirmation between the ears, means the brain and the heart, and you cannot breed heart and brain, you just can train it. But there are several aspects and confirmation biomechanics which makes it easier to train the horses and which is nearly guaranteed for keep the horses in soundness, which is for us the most important thing, because it makes no sense to bring the horse up to the levels and then finally have a horse with a tendon issue or with some arthritic problems which cannot perform. That would be very counterproductive. So it's up to you. Just ask your question and I'm more than happy to answer any question.
Well, let's start then with what you saw in Florida, the horses that came before you, and give us some examples then, Christian, of the kind of confirmation that you saw, if there were any particular traits. Obviously, there's confirmation weaknesses and there's confirmation strengths. So let's start with the foot, because the old adage is, of course, no foot, no horse. Let's look at the limbs.
That's right. So, and also we say that the foot or the hoof of the horse is the second heart of the horse. And yes, it's a running shoe, and especially in our days, it's getting more and more important. If you see all the footing, and if you compare it to 30 years ago, I think it's not statistically proven, it's not science proven, but this is what I heard from a lot of experts as well. Due to the fact that we are just riding our horses now on show grounds, on show footing and on synthetic footing, the horses are not used so much to unequal surface, hard surface, soft surface. So they are just running and running through on a perfect track the entire day. And then suddenly they are an uneven circumstances. So then that creates a tendon issue. So, and then in the soft surface and this top footing what we have for the shows, and nothing against the footing because it's perfect for performance, but it might not be perfect for daily training. There it doesn't matter if the horse has a little bit of narrow hoof, if a horse has a flat hoof, if a horse is a little bit soft in the sole of the hoof, but if it comes to rear hard surface or jumping into water, landing on hard surface, then we can create problems. So that's the reason why I'm very much focused on the hoof and on the hoof mechanism and on a good failure, because with every single step that the horse is doing, they press the old blood out of the hoof and creates a vacuum, and so it brings new blood into the hoof with the body-owned anti-inflammatory stuff, so which prevents from an avicular disease. So that's the reason why we are so much focused on the hoofs. And on top of this, sometimes, you know, the hoofs are like I don't know the term, like fins for the people who go diving, and then you look at the horse and say, okay, you want to go a long distance run with fins on it? I don't think so. So that's the reason why it's so important to just look at the horse, because the hoof itself transfers up over the tendon ligament up to the shoulder, and you see the soreness in the muscles, and you see how the horse is dealing with this, and we can make it way easier if we just have a correct hoof.
And also straightness, of course, of the limbs is so important, and it starts with obviously looking at the straightness. Just talk us through some of the things that you were looking for in the limbs then, Christian, for those listeners who were not there to see the horses that were before you.
Yeah, you know, the body itself, or the Lord created a pretty balanced body, and unfortunately then the Lord got the idea that we can jump on this horse and get it out of balance, which is the biggest weakness for the horse. And so now we have to find a way to bring it back into balance. So at the end of the day, all we're looking for in confirmation is just balance. And balance does not mean perfect body. Balance just means, okay, this horse can deal with its body, like humans as well. So you have tiny little people who cannot walk, and you have tiny people who are super balanced. You have large people who are absolutely athletes, or you have large people who you cannot do one step after the next one. So that's pretty much the same with the horses. Of course, there are some biomechanically perfect points, the golden cut. So, for example, if we see the pastern, we want to have a parallelity between the pastern and the shoulder, because this acts like a swing, acts like a spring for the horse. And due to the fact that the horse has no bone connection between the front leg and the body, we need this spring just to make it soft for the horse in terms of landing after the fence or with a long distance canter. Yes, and of course we are looking for straightness in the joints, because these joints, mainly from the knee down, they are not made for rotation. They are just made for back and forth. So if the horse is not straight, every single step goes a little bit against the joint, and the horse knows this, and then it's, you know, it is for the horse a little bit like having a little rock in your shoe, and every single step before you step the ground, they hold themselves a little bit in the muscles. So, oops, that might hurt when I'm touching the ground, or that might be a little bit weird feeling, so I better contract my muscles first before I touch the ground, which at the end of the day just tears on the tendon and ligaments, and which creates a suspensory. So if the horse has a perfect hoof and a perfect biomechanics in the leg, it just goes through like we go with running shoes when we're on a cross-country run.
Absolutely. And then, of course, all of that goes up into the shoulder, and if you have that effect. And so critical is the angle of the shoulder too. Let's talk about the front end of the horse and what you were looking for as examples of good conformation, Christian.
Yeah, with the shoulder, the shoulder gives the balance for the horse. You know, these are the two main lines what we want to see in the horse. We go from the point of the shoulder over the spina scapula, which is it's a little bone structure in the mid of the scapula, and we follow this over the wither on top of the horse. And then we have the other line from the point of the hip to the hip joint, and we just imagine these two lines going forwards and backwards, and then where they cross over the horse, we go down, and this is the point of gravity of the horse. So that makes the shoulder so important. So as more upright the shoulder is, as more the point of gravity is in the front, and if more flat the croup is, as more the point of gravity is in the front as well. So we have the saying in conformation, you can deal with one problem. If you have two problems, better don't do it. So if you have, for example, a real nice shoulder, you can deal a little bit with a flat croup, or vice versa. If you have a upright shoulder, you need a really good croup just to keep the horse in balance. The length of the shoulder and the setup of the shoulder also defines the rotation point of the shoulder. And as lower the rotation point of the shoulder is, as less movement the horse has. And this less movement means, okay, the horse has a short step in the front. If the horse has a short step in the front, they cannot step under with the hind leg. So immediately the hind leg is just a pushing hind leg, but not carrying hind leg, which gets into the result to a little bit of hollow back, which can create some kissing spots. And on top of this, this hollow back pulls up the neck in the wrong position, so that we have the problems between C2 and C3. So it's the wrong angle, which again pushes, it goes on that the lower neck muscle pushes the head just up, which blocks the shoulder again, and it starts with this circle of devil. So as higher the rotation point is, as more movement we have, and then on top for the jumpers and for the eventers, we like to have the shoulder a little bit in the front, so which gives the horse more space to lift up the lower arm and to get this perfect style over the fence, without lifting up the wither so much, which is especially for us as eventers so important, because we do not want in the cross country the jump like in a show jumping horse. We want to integrate the jump into the breathing rhythm. And if the horse is just using the entire body like a show jumper, and it's too careful, that it might create some injuries in the leg of the horse when they're landing, or maybe, of course, some falls of the rider and the horse. And this is for sure not our goal. So that's the reason why the shoulder is so important for jumpers and dressage horses as well.
Let's look at the top line now, because we have to have some imagination with a young horse that's not fully developed to look at what their potential is in their frame. So give us some pointers there, Christian, if you would, please.
Top line, you know, in our days, and especially when we talk, you know, when we talk about the eventers, everybody's talking about the heart of eventing, means the cross country. We're not talking so much about dressage and the ability to do the stadium jumping. But we have also the thing, they jump in all shapes, which you can see now in the jumping world. We have stallions which provide a very long back, and these horses are really, really good jumper, very flexible in their back. And we also have the French influence of the horses, which create a little more short back, and they are very powerful. So it has to fit the mental system of the horse. The benefit is, if you have a longer back, then it's easier for the hind leg to step under. They are more flexible. They are easier to bend in the dressage. They might cover more ground, but they are a little bit harder to put together. So if you have this real long stride, and you know, in the cross country, we are not talking about a 3-beat canter anymore. When we go with 600 meters per minute, we are having a 4-beat canter, which means the outside front leg is touching the ground prior to the inside hind leg. So we do not have this 3-beat. The horse is in a 4-beat canter. And now we have the long back. And then in our days, with this narrow fences, it's really hard for us as riders then just to press the hand down, shift our point of gravity backwards, and get the horse on the hunches and lift up the wither to focus on to the next fence without pulling on the reins too much and without bringing the horse out of breathing rhythm. So if you have a very short horse, then it's very easy to do this. But the problem with a very short horse is that they get very wide behind, because they do not want to step in their own heels, and they do not have this flexibility in the body. They are every time a little bit stiff. So most of the time when they start jumping, they stop breathing over the fence. But they might be better horses for stadium jumping. They might not be so good dressage horses. So the perfect length of the horse, of the back of the horse, is, if you imagine from the end of the saddle, this is the top of a triangle. And then you go to the point of the hip on both sides and you create this triangle. If it has a correct angle, a correct right angle, 90-degree angle, this is what we talk about. This is a perfect length, the area of the loins. If it has less angle, so let's say about 60, 70, then we talk about long loins. If it has more angle than 90 degrees, then we talk about short loins. But at the end of the day, the conformation system which I developed is not about saying this is good or bad. It is just a description of the horse and say, this horse, due to this golden cut, has a short and long. That does not mean that the horse cannot jump or can jump, but it just gives us an idea for the rideability.
And then, of course, the hind end, all important hind end, the angle of the hip, the stifle, the hock. Let's talk about that hind limb and what you're looking for there.
There are two hearts in my breast. The one is the heart as a vet, and there for sure I look for straight connection, well-pronounced bones, well-pronounced joints. And if you look from the hind end, you want to go in a straight line from the seat bone over the hock, straight line down the cannon bone into the mid of the hoof. This is the perfect thing. And if you look from behind, the stifle should be the widest part of the horse. And in our sport, that is most of the time. So in other sports, the belly comes up a little bit more than the stifle. But anyway, so this would be the perfect horse. Problem, especially for jumping. And our horses have to jump out of full speed. And the horse does not jump with the front leg, does not jump with the hind leg. The horse jumps first with the area of the loins. That's the reason why we like in show jumpers to have a little bit of kind of roach back, because they are more powerful in the area of the loins. So if we have the hind legs a little bit wider and a little bit toed out on both sides, That gives the horse opportunity, if we approach full speed at fence, to widen the hind legs and to have the space for the front leg being in between, even if we are in a deep distance to the fence, and use the entire body to jump the fence. If the hind legs are very narrow, then these horses have the tendency to jump with a little bit hollow back. And you know, most of the horses, if you just approach a fence and you are not looking for distances, you just keep your canter, most of the horses are going deep to the fence. So it's our act as a rider to find the perfect distance, and most of the time we have to hold them away a little bit to the fence to give them more space. So, and if a horse goes into a tricky situation in a cross country and is going deep, and it has no chance to widen the hind legs to create the space for the front leg in between, then they jump with a hollow back. So I want to make it as easy as possible that the horse has space for the forehead and can lift up the wither and can jump with its body and not like a Dachshund in his back over the fence. That's the reason why I like to have the little bit toe out, even if it's conformationally. And that's every time what they ask me, my function as a breeding director or as a sport judge, I say, are we breeding for performance, or are we judging for performance, or are we judging for breeding, which are two completely different pairs of shoes.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the one thing that, of course, we all have when we look at a horse for the first time is that general impression.
Yes.
When you first look at a horse that is standing before you, where do your eyes go?
For me, when I look at a horse, and this is what I train everybody who is working with me, no matter what horse is in front of me, no matter whether it's a draft horse or Shetland pony or whatever, every time I question myself, what do I like? And this is, I think this is the most important thing for all of us as trainers and judges, not looking for weaknesses. That's so easy. It points out, I see this group, I see this rider, I see how he rides, she's just riding the wallet of his daddy. I cannot deal with this. Just enjoy. What can you see? And then you will see horses which are maybe ugly in the beginning. They have so many nice points, which makes them absolutely athletes. And you say, ooh, holy shit. That is a really, really good horse. So no matter how the face looks like, no matter whether it's a chestnut mare with a lot of white, no matter whether it has a little bit of Roman nose, they are athletes. So, and if I can see how the horse is in balance, how the horse stands, and then if I just get an idea for the feeling for the horse, and the horse looks at me with a kind of an arrogance and say, hey, Why are you looking at me? And I see this in the eye. I say, this is a horse which might perform. But this is, yeah, it's, you cannot get this in an objective way. It's just subjective. It's how the horses talk to us, how we feel for the horses. And I think that's really hard to learn. You have to be addicted to it, and you have to love them all. And so this is real horsemanship. So, and just feeling the horse, and I hate this term horse whisperer. Somebody says, you are the kind of horse whisperer, then I get a stomach ulcer. So I prefer horse listener and just waiting for the horse, because they tell us. They tell us what they want to do. They tell us how they are unbalanced. And, of course, when you look at the horse the first time, with a focus on the sport, they tell us also how they want to be ridden. And it is pretty easy when I'm talking about the equine conformation system. I can see the horse with a halter on in the stand, and I know already how the horse moves and where the horse has the weakness and the strength. So, and I just have to look for the character. And of course, you know, my main breeding, or my favorite ones, are the Turkinas. Yes, at the end of the day, we're looking for a pretty face as well.
Give me just a couple of sentences. What should I be looking for in conformation to breed a future event horse? What would that short sentence be?
Balance. Just balance. It is very often, especially with our sport, that the people think if we cross a dressage and a jumper, we get an eventer. No, not in our days. And I think especially eventing is the most interesting part now for the breeders, because since they changed the rules during the Athens Olympics, that we do not have the long format with the racetrack anymore into the short format. A lot of people say just do it to the benefit of the Germans. Yes, we are ahead of everybody since they changed the rules. And so now Great Britain is not winning every medal on New Zealand. And you see the complete different type in an event horse in our days compared to 20 years ago. Of course, we need blood. The blood does not have to be in the first generation, but in the third generation, if you just look there, there should be a couple of thoroughbreds, because this is easier for the lung, this is easier for the heart rate, this is easier to perform a long distance. And, you know, jumping itself might not be so important, because jumping comes from confidence. If you have a good rider who gives the horse the confidence to jump 120 or 130, they can do it. Most of it is rideability, because with the rideability, I do not have to fight with the horse. And my feeling, my goal, and every time when I talk to my students, they say, oh, what's your goal in riding? I have only this one goal. I say, I want to ride so good that the horses love to be ridden by me. And this is the same thing. If you ask your horse, make sure that your horse will choose you as well. So, and if you go through the international event horses and see the different confirmation, there's more than confirmation. Confirmation is 10-15%. But if you see the relationship between rider and horse, and that's the reason why it's so hard to get the 3- or 4-star horse, and you cannot buy them. You cannot compete. You cannot compete with a Grand Prix dressage horse. You can put another rider on it, you can down center line and do the ones. You can compete with a 160 class horse in show jumping with somebody else trained. Maybe not so good, maybe better, doesn't matter. But in eventing, if we talk about the top level, this trust, what the horse has into the rider, this communication, what we, the rider, have when we approach the fence, how we talk to our horse, this is unique. And this is the fascination of our sport. And yeah, you might sell a 1- or 2-star horse, but nobody is going to sell a 4- or 5-star horse in our days. This is just the love of your life, and you just have to go with this and hope that the horse stays sound, and hope that the horse has good hooves, and hope that the horse has a good conformation. But on top of this, hope that the horse has the biggest heart to jump.
Great advice, Christian. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to come on the program and talk us through some of the essential points.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Well, you're very welcome, and I really appreciate you taking the time to do this, and of course, for judging the future event horse. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
And that's our show for this week. Lots of information about the future event horse, its program, and what to look for as prospective breeders and owners. We hope you enjoyed it, and you can find out more information, of course, on the website at useventing.com. You can also download this podcast from any podcast app, as well as online, of course, at useventing.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode of the USEA's official podcast. In the meanwhile, please do follow us on social media to catch up on all the news as it happens here at the USEA. Until the next time, thank you for listening and enjoy your eventing.